Morning, I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Great to have you with us this morning. Joining us now in studio, we have Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. Sheriff, welcome back to the show. Good to have you, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm great. Did you enjoy the Keela Richardson concert last week? I saw you there. It was a fun time.
I did. I enjoyed the whole thing. The atmosphere, everything was good. I did not go to the other
the parade.
I didn't go to the parade. Yeah. We helped them with the escort, obviously, but I had work to do. And where we were able to get down there, down to the concert. It was a cool location, cool event, something we may be telling our great-grandkids about 10, 20 years
ago. I know, it was neat. Anything from a security standpoint worth mentioning? It seemed to all go off without a hitch. And they, you know, the GSC or whoever staff took care of things, and everything was fine.
I didn't notice anything. I had one lost phone that was given to me. And I said, well, I'll hold on to it because somebody will call it.
Yeah, right.
And because there was lost and found, but it was way in the front. So we waited, and I moved around for about 10 minutes, and all of a sudden it called. And she said, well, how will I know it's you? I said, well, I'm standing here in the sheriff's office uniform. And she says, I didn't know it was you. Where's your phone?
That's great. We had a stabbing that got kind of interesting after the fact. This is on Doris Avenue. Is that right?
That's correct. On the 10th, we responded to 8535 Doris Avenue for a stabbing victim. A 27-year-old Hispanic male was stabbed in the abdomen and right arm by his roommate after some sort of an altercation. The suspect was also Hispanic. We went to the hospital to follow up on him, found out that there were non-life-threatening injuries. However, as part of the investigation, we had to head back to location to look for the suspect, whose name was Joaquin Valdez, and we noticed him. He was hiding in a shed around the back. He claimed it was self-defense. We discussed and all that, but we weren't able to establish probable cause. I mean, it's what he said, she said type of thing.
Okay,
and so we didn't arrest anyone. However,
the guy who committed the stabbing, you couldn't establish that he wasn't justified self-defense.
Right,
and the guy who was stabbed, it's not life-threatening. So.
They're
basically
both saying self-defense, and no one's really given us enough to arrest one or versus the other.
So guy in the shed, just being a shed guy, but
hanging,
he's not, he doesn't get arrested for the stabbing because, as you say, unclear. But then what?
Well, yeah, a total of seven people were there at that address.
In the shed?
Well, no, at the address.
Okay.
And at least one was in the shed. And they were all determined to be undocumented and illegal here in the country.
Oh.
So we provided ICE detainers and warrants complete on all of them, and they were taken to the jail for further processing through ICE.
Was the guy that was in the shed, was he also here illegally?
That's correct.
Okay. And so how did the officers get from one guy being here illegally to everybody else in the building?
Well, we're trying to identify who the suspect was. We obviously found someone in the shed, but other people there, and we're looking for witnesses.
Okay.
And when we determine that they're not here legally, we're not going to turn our back on that.
Okay.
We're not necessarily doing raids, as you probably have heard, but when we come upon someone that's here illegally, we're going to do what the law provides.
Okay, and that's kind of interesting, too, because I hadn't been clear what our policy here was, you know, whether it was undocumented status as a secondary fact around already committing a crime. Obviously, that's an easy case. I hadn't known whether we were detaining people, say, only for the crime of being here undocumented. And the answer is yes, if you discover them.
If we discover them while we're already there
doing something else. Okay.
Crime. Yes, that's correct.
And so, because I actually had somebody had communicated with me and said, you know, there seems like there's a bunch of ICE detainers at people in the jail right now. Ask the sheriff. Well, I don't have to. Now that's what happened. There wasn't a raid. There was just an incident where you produced a bunch of them, and now they're in jail waiting for processing from ICE.
Yeah, whatever that process looks like. Yeah, this is part of why we're on the task force.
Yep.
We have some task force officers, because otherwise we would have to wait hours and hours to get, in mean, many cases, and we think we'd wait for hours and hours in this particular case to get an ICE agent to come and take care of this. So we were able to process that a lot quicker.
We also had, and I'll take this as a good week, when the highest profile things were that stabbing, whatever incident. And then also somebody got shot with a BB gun at a bus stop. Is it a school bus stop or a regular bus stop? ECAT stop.
I think it was a regular bus stop.
Okay.
There was two actual incidents, one on the 10th, I think one on the 11th.
Okay.
And where an individual, someone in a white truck, and we believe they're connected.
Okay.
Someone in a white truck pulled out a BB gun or pellet gun and started shooting at individuals.
Just because I, airsoft or BBs? Like copper or we don't know?
I understand it's BBs.
Okay.
I'm assuming because of the distance, sometimes pellets, but my experience at least, the pellets go a little bit fast, a little bit farther.
Well, airsoft, if it's a decent one, it can go a long way too.
Oh, but airsoft, okay. Yeah. No, but this is just a
regular BB gun. Okay, got it.
One individual was hit in the thumb. And another and was in hit in the backside.
Okay, and so they're okay. I mean, even though they were hit, okay. Not injured, didn't break the skin or anything. It's not John Candy,
No,
it's
as not, I understand, they're still okay.
Okay, but you cannot go around shooting people with a BB gun.
No, you can't. I mean, as the old saying goes, you could put an eye out. You certainly could.
Yeah.
There's something, some very serious injuries that can take place.
And even
just indiscriminately shoot BB guns.
And even if they don't get hurt in what you would consider a serious way, that is still a battery, right? That's still is it a deadly missile?
It could be worse. Yeah, it depends.
What's the charge on that?
Well, at this point, it's battery because the injuries aren't life-threatening or they're not permanent.
Okay.
But if it's something where a reasonable person would think that could cause serious bodily injury, if I'm looking at you and I aim right there at your head with a BB gun, whether I hit you in the eyes or not,
right.
then that certainly could be aggravated assault or battery.
Reckless endangerment, maybe something like that.
It could be if you think it's if you're just playing around. Again, if you're playing around and want to show me the gun, but you're toying around and laughing and joking, then yeah, it could be a number of different things. But okay. Typically, it's battery.
Yep.
Or aggravated battery or assault or aggravated assault.
Okay.
One of those four things.
All right. In any case, you cannot be driving around shooting people with BB guns at bus stops.
It's not funny. Yeah, I don't know. The first thing I said, was this another one of those stupid TikTok things?
Yeah,
yeah. People are doing this? I don't know. I don't have that information. All I know is you shouldn't be doing it.
So you had a guy who, he was in the ambulance, he was out of the ambulance, and then he was arrested for a bunch of stuff. What happened here?
Yeah, Travis Montez Mitchell. He's 40 years old, so you think he'd know better, right? He apparently was slumped over in his vehicle, and ambulance showed up, and while they were providing treatment to him, he was in the back of the ambulance. Well, he noticed that the sheriff's department, the sheriff's office, had been called. That's us. We got called. We started heading that way. And when he saw us, he jumps out of the ambulance and he starts taking off running. Not a fast runner. We were able to catch him and detain him. And the car that he had was a rental car. And one of the rental car companies came in to go ahead and document what's in the car, take possession of the car, and then they said, hey, I found this bag of drugs in this car. And that led us to search the car, and we found, get this is a lot of stuff. We found 300 grams of methamphetamine, 17 grams of fentanyl, 25 grams of crack cocaine. So he went old school.
Wow.
with us also. And then he also had a .45 caliber handgun with ammunition, digital scales, and plastic baggies. Here's what gets me, that according to a report, he had 23 previous felony convictions.
Come on.
Why he's out, I don't know. Now, again, maybe he charged with 10 burglaries at one time. I don't know the circumstance. I didn't dig into it. But I can tell you that 23 previous convictions. I hope these convictions are going to, the 24th, 5th, and 6th conviction will stick, and he'll spend a lot of time in prison.
Those sound like high in number. Are those trafficking amounts to what are those?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it does take a lot to traffic in fentanyl, and 17 grams, all those are trafficking amounts.
He's okay.
Charged with 4 grams of fentanyl is trafficking.
It's trafficking, okay. And he has 4 times that much.
Grams,
okay.
And 14 grams of meth is trafficking, and he had 300 grams.
Wow.
Okay, and scales well,
and a gun
all
and,
stuff,
you know,
gun, yeah.
And all of that.
He's not a convicted felon one time, 23
right.
times.
Right, right. I wanted to ask you, I don't know if you saw the article, the PNJ, it's really a USA Today article from Florida, but talking about they claim the higher incidence of searches being done on black drivers after they're pulled over for incidental things or what people call pretextual stops, which is broken taillight or heavy tinting or, things of what you'd say are, like the tag is expired, kind of minor infractions, but are still, you can pull somebody over for that.
Right.
I just wanted to talk with you because, you've worked at the city, you've worked at the county. People hear about the pretextual and that sounds like it's a bad thing, but the law enforcement officers that I've had contact with, like pretextual stops are a incredibly valuable way of finding criminals who are doing other things. Is that, you tell me, what's, you know.
There are times that we're aware of a particular, we get a, you know, people call us and say, hey, there's a drug house in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And they think that there's nothing really we can do or nothing mm-hmm. we do. But really what we're doing is we're spreading that information to the deputies that are working that area. And so when a deputy sees a vehicle leaving that area and like, ooh, that's the house that was supposed to be selling drugs. I wonder if that car just bought some drugs there. And so as they're watching them, they noticed the tag had been expired, and then they stopped the car. You can't just forget about what you knew. You know, you still have to get to evaluate that. But it's not just out of the blue. Mm-hmm. It is a stop based upon what the information. That's why you were there. And then you stop that car, and then you run a dog around the car, and you search that car. That's kind of where the pretextual part of it is. But again, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not an illegal thing. It's okay to do it.
Right.
As long as the stop itself is valid. You can't make up a stop, obviously, and we're certainly not doing that. We have body cameras to help us yeah. verify we're not doing that sort of thing. So that's the basis for it.
And I, you know, over the years of talking to you and talking to PPD and Santa Rosa, loads of arrests for major things started with a traffic stop for blowing a stop sign, speeding, not having your lights on, all kinds of things like that, right?
That's correct. Yeah, there's a factors last couple of weeks, I guess we made some traffic stops and ended up making some decent sized drug arrests for sales, not just people that are
purchasing,
having user amounts of drugs. These are people that have one particular case. We stopped a car. I think it had the tag not assigned or something wrong with the tag, and it was a dealer tag maybe. I can't remember, temporary tag. So we stopped the car and ended up getting a lady in this particular incident, since she had a number of drugs to include heroin. And she had syringes and she had all this stuff. And we put it out on our social media platforms. And my point is, yes, we make traffic stops. And oftentimes traffic stops lead to individuals that shouldn't be driving in the first place, people that have guns that shouldn't have guns because they're convicted felons, and people that have drugs and guns. And obviously they're tearing up our community. So a lot of good police work starts with a traffic stop.
And I did want to just give you a chance to respond, because in that article, you know, they list Escambia as one of the agencies that has a, what they called, and I talked about this yesterday a little bit, but a disproportionate ratio between black drivers who get searched versus white drivers who get searched out of the total number of stops that wind up getting made. They say it was about a 3-to-1 ratio. And, you know, I know you've done a lot in this regard, but, you know, can you just maybe either respond to that charge they're kind of making or explain what you do in the sheriff's office to make sure that you're not racially profiling anybody?
Yeah, well, that charge obviously has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with Escambia County Sheriff's Office. That's all purely Florida Highway Patrol, the troopers' information they're gathering. But however,
thank you for clarifying that.
Yes, yeah, we also, while we're not obligated to do this TSDR, this traffic stop data reporting, we do that, and then we evaluate, which means we when we stop a car, we document what the stop was for. We document the race and the sex of the driver. What happened? Was it? Were they given a warning? Were they given a citation? Was the car searched? All that stuff is documented on our own forms. And then what we do is we look for signs of bias. We look for one deputy that may have a higher ratio of warnings or tickets or anything like that. And then we address that. We address that with a lieutenant. We address that with the deputy themselves. But we also look at what area they're working. Are they working in an area that's predominantly a black area? Are they stopping cars? Do they have a canine, which means they'd probably have more searches because a canine is more available in that particular situation. So we look for the bias. I don't know the numbers that we've had. Based on what statistics, I haven't compared their statistic to what our statistic would be, but I can tell you the last couple of years, our numbers have been nowhere near that. Now, the enforcement actions of the Florida Highway Patrol and the Sheriff's Office is a lot different. Mm-hmm. They're primarily traffic. They do a lot. I'm assuming they do a lot more traffic stops, and their data would be more pure traffic stops. We do what we call kind of informed patrol when we're trying to stop a crime. So when we look at a heat map where the most crimes are being reported, and we will put our deputies in that area more often. So that's kind of – it's a little different. We don't do as many traffic stops as the Florida Highway Patrol would do. obviously, we're honestly, we're busy answering calls for service.
Right.
You know, every 911 call, every domestic violence call. So their sample size is much greater and probably more pure to specific traffic stop criteria.
No, and that's a really interesting point about the where you're patrolling, and even the nature of the location you're patrolling in might be a place where you would have a higher frequency of stops as opposed to, I mean, like the number of houses per acre can make a difference in how many stops you're winding up making just because there's more people in some areas. And so taking all of that into account and looking at the numbers at a much more informed rate, that makes perfect sense to me. And again, the fact that you're Escambia County Sheriff's Office and not FHP, which is a good distinction to make. You also have the memorial that you just did, yesterday, and then you're traveling to D.C. tomorrow for the National Memorial, right?
Yeah, unfortunately, we've added a name to our memorial. Jeremy Cassidy was succumbed to the injuries that he suffered years ago.
Yeah.
So we're adding him to not just our memorial, which we had our law enforcement memorial yesterday morning. Last week, we went to Tallahassee for the state memorial, and then tomorrow, a couple of us will be heading to Washington, D.C. to be adding Jeremy's name to the National Memorial. We don't often go to the all three memorials, but unfortunately,
when
you add one of your own to these memorials, and the family goes, we think it's only right and fitting that we represent Escambia County and say
absolutely
thank you to the sacrifice.
Sheriff Simmons, as always, a pleasure, sir. Thank you for the time. Thanks for doing what you do, and we'll talk to you again next week.
You bet. Y'all take care.